And welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. In a study that's first of its kind, University of Michigan researchers will provide genetic testing and Alzheimer's risk estimates for people who are already experiencing mild cognitive impairment, hoping to learn how they respond. To talk about the upcoming study, I'm joined by Dr. Scott Roberts, associate professor in the Department of Health Behavior and Health Education at the U of M School of Public Health. Welcome to the program, Scott.
Thanks very much.
So you're looking for volunteers for your study on the risk evaluation and education for Alzheimer's disease. Isn't the public, though, already quite familiar with this disease?
Yes, certainly a lot of people are aware of the disease, but what I think they might get from participating in our study is to learn more about a condition known as mild cognitive impairment, or MCI. Describes people who are already developing some memory symptoms more than you would expect given their age, and they're at a particularly high risk for Alzheimer's. So what we do is take people with MCI, we provide them the opportunity for genetic testing that would give them more precise sense of what their chances are of developing Alzheimer's in the next few years. So that would be the novel piece of information is this risk information.
Is it fairly common, then, for someone who suffers from at least mild cognitive impairment for that to lead to full-blown Alzheimer's?
Yes. In the 5 years after someone develops MCI, about half of people go on to develop full-fledged Alzheimer's disease. But as I alluded to earlier, this genetic test would give people a better sense of whether they're at even more elevated risk on top of having the MCI diagnosis.
So really, it's primarily a genetic factor that leads to the development of Alzheimer's rather than some kind of a lifestyle choice?
I don't think we can say simply one way or the other. There certainly are genetic factors that increase a person's risk, and there are likely some lifestyle factors that may influence risk as well. We don't have a full understanding. But what we do in this study is we offer a test for a gene known as APOE, where one variant, the E4 version, has been shown in numerous studies to increase a person's risk for Alzheimer's disease.
What are the signs that someone is suffering from mild cognitive impairment?
So with mild cognitive impairment, one would have memory problems that are noticeable both to the person with MCI and loved ones. And like I said earlier, this would be more than you would expect given the normal aging process. However, they're not to the point where the person loses the ability to function in everyday life. People still carry on their usual activities, but they just have a little bit more cognitive difficulties than are normal. So it definitely is to the point where someone is not like you see in Alzheimer's, where they start to lose the ability to perform their occupation or normal social functioning. People with MCI still generally retain those abilities.
At this point, how prevalent is Alzheimer's among our elderly?
Well, estimates vary, but there's some suggestions that around 5 million people in the U.S. currently are affected by Alzheimer's disease, which is obviously a significant number and will likely only increase in the years to come, given that we're seeing baby boomers move into the 65 and older range.
I mean, it's known that as you get older, there is a mental slowdown. Is there a sense that we're actually seeing more cases of Alzheimer's proportionally than we have in the past, or is it that we're able to diagnose the disease for what it is?
I think we have improved in our ability to detect and diagnose the disease. I don't think a greater proportion of our older people are developing Alzheimer's. It's just that we have, sheer numbers. We have more people demographically, in the 70 and above groups now than we, did earlier, both because of the baby boomer cohort, and then also people are living longer. We have longer life expectancy now than we used to.
I'm talking to Dr. Scott Roberts, associate professor in the Department of Health Behavior and Health Education at the U of M School of Public Health. Now, the study itself, if someone does find that they have a genetic likelihood to develop Alzheimer's, is there anything they can do between their mild case of cognitive impairment and their potential future of having Alzheimer's to slow the process down or even stop it somehow?
Well, there's no proven ways to prevent Alzheimer's once someone has MCI. However, there are things one can do to help cope better with the risk. I think there are factors that influence memory and thinking abilities regardless of whether one has MCI or not. So, for example, one could try to make sure that they're treating things like depression or other medical problems that may add thinking difficulties on top of MCI. There's also some suggestion that physical exercise, staying mentally and socially active may help keep one sharper. Again, it's not a foolproof way of preventing Alzheimer's, but it tends to be helpful to people who are dealing with MCI. There's also the thought of advanced planning, so thinking ahead about making decisions about retirement, healthcare decisions.
It seems that a person's family is often more impacted by an Alzheimer's diagnosis than the person themselves sometimes. Are most spouses and families really able to handle this disease once it's progressed into a serious state?
I think it often depends on the family, and it depends on the level of support they may have. There's a vast literature showing the what is known as caregiver burden. So there's a lot of financial and physical toll that the disease can take on loved ones. And so, again, that's where I think this advanced planning comes in, thinking as a family ahead to the point where, well, if this does progress to the point of Alzheimer's, how are we going to address these problems? And getting, some sources of support in place ahead of time can be very valuable.
I see. And at this point, there is no real structure for preparing people. Or do doctors typically, when they deal with patients that have, mild cognitive impairment, do they let them know that, hey, you're likely going to face these types of consequences in the future?
Well, I think, there is some variability in terms of the types of discussions a neurologist or other physicians will have with families. But there are a lot of existing support groups. For example, the National Alzheimer's Association has chapters in every state, and there are two different chapters within the state of Michigan. So they help provide information. They have hotlines for caregivers. They have community-based support groups. They have educational resources. So I think the Alzheimer's Association is the best known example of providing some of this education and support that families might need. And obviously, there are gerontological professionals. There's, social workers, for example, nurses who can help also provide some of this level of assistance as well.
I think we all know that Alzheimer's involves forgetting things, but what happens as the disease progresses? Just how disabled does a person become?
Well, over time, you see memory worsen. You also see other thinking skills deteriorate as well. You see, for example, people might have language difficulties. They might have what are called executive functioning difficulties, meaning it's difficult for them to multitask. There's visual spatial skills are impaired. So we see over time virtually all thinking abilities are affected to the point where in an end-stage Alzheimer's disease, you see people might lose profound abilities and ultimately not even be able to communicate verbally at all. So it can become a very serious disease.
But it ultimately doesn't affect the physical body then. Does that mean that a person's lifespan is not affected by Alzheimer's and you can live for many decades in a state of almost a vegetative state at some point?
There are some cases where people live quite a number of years after a diagnosis. I think the average lifespan after diagnosis is on the order of 8 to 10 years. So ultimately, it does, if it gets severe enough, it can affect things like people's ability to swallow and eat. So obviously, that would affect lifespan. But we do see people, still can retain physical skills in terms of being able to walk around, and in fact, wandering is a concern sometimes in later stages of Alzheimer's disease. So.
One last thing, for those who don't know, can you give a simple description of what Alzheimer's actually does physically in the brain from what we understand about it?
So basically, the two hallmarks of the disease are what are known as plaques and tangles, and so these are ways in which the physical structure of the brain do get affected, and various parts of the brain might be affected. We still don't ultimately know what starts this this process. For example, I mentioned these plaques. They're constituted of a substance known as amyloid. We still don't fully understand how things get triggered, but the thinking now is that actually this process may be many years in the making, and that people may actually have some of these early neurological changes maybe even decades before they manifest the clinical symptoms of Alzheimer's disease.
Dr. Scott Roberts, Associate Professor in the Department of Health Behavior and Health Education at the U of M School of Public Health. Thank you very much for joining me, Scott.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
And we'll be right back with more. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS.